this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, next hour they're going to be the views of Don Scott, who has been studying chronic fatigue syndrome and AIDS and all of the other man-made diseases for a number of years. And he's just put together a new book. We'll be talking about that. But basically, people have to understand that at the aftermath of the Second World War, a number of very evil and wicked men were brought to the United States. They were the Nazi scientists who carried out some of the macabre experiments in the prison camps of Germany during the Second World War, and I think that they should have been tried, but they were not. They were brought here, and they were allowed to continue their experiments in mind control. Of course, they built the America's satellite system and rocket system, but they also, of course, were working on developing terrible new diseases, and out of that case came a series of experiments, specifically with the mycoplasm and then with other organisms, how to create chronic and terrible and disabling diseases. If you were to read Zygmunt Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, and somewhere between page 55 and 65, I don't have the exact page memorized, but in those pages, one of the footnotes there, he talks, now this is written in 1970, and he writes about how in the future we're going to be able to create storms and droughts and chronic new diseases. 30 years from now we'll be able to do it. Well, we're 40 years from now, and I believe, of course, all the evidence is that these diseases are man-made, whether it be the Lyme disease that plagues probably several million Americans, or chronic fatigue, which plagues millions of Americans. And this is one reason why the Centers for Disease Control and other government agencies say these don't exist. We couldn't let the American people know that these have been intentionally and purposely, or maybe accidentally, who knows, released on the American people. But that is the background. Don Scott, thanks very much for being with us again.
Certainly my pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Well, where do we go from here? I'm going to let you do most of the talking. I just want to listen to what you have to say, because you have gathered such a wealth of information.
Well, certainly your introduction outlined completely what it is that we're working at. As you know, back in 1995, a lady phoned me at my home. I was retired. I was 71 years old, and I was happy to read and to write and to think about things. And the phone rang, and this lady said, Mr. Scott, you don't know me, but I'm ill, and somebody said I should call you. And I said, well, I don't know what you're ill with or what your problem is, but if you'd like to come around and see me and bring some documents with you, we'll talk it over and see if there's any way I can help. And she agreed to come the following Saturday morning, and promptly at 9 o'clock she was at the door with a large briefcase. And I invited her in, and she told me her name, and she was a local teacher here in Sudbury, Ontario, Canada. And she said she had a disease called chronic fatigue syndrome. Well, frankly, I really hadn't heard much more than the name of the disease. I had heard of one radio program about it at one point, but I was just kind of interested in it as I was driving along listening to the car radio. But here sitting with me was a lady who had the disease, and I said, well, what is the problem? And she said, well...
Hold that thought, Don. We'll be right back.
Okay.
All right. Well, that was your introduction to chronic fatigue syndrome, so you picked
yes,
the story up there.
And I asked her what her problem was, and she said, well, my employer is bullying me terribly, and my union is neglecting me, and the Human Rights Commission of the province has really double dealt with me, and the lawyer that I hired has not helped me, but is suing me to get the money he says I owe him for things he doesn't seem to have done. And the bank that holds my mortgage is wanting to foreclose because I'm missing time and my paychecks are lower and I can't keep up the payments. And I said, my goodness, you really do have a problem, and it all starts with you being ill with this disease, chronic fatigue syndrome. She said, yes, when I became ill with chronic fatigue syndrome, I had to begin losing time at work, and no doctor seemed to be able to help me. I went to a number of doctors, and they all, none of them really was able to say very much about it. And now with my house on the auction block and the threat of being fired from my job is sitting right there, somebody said, call on you, so here I am. And so I started to help her. And I was able to help her in many ways that are really kind of fundamentally ordinary things of life. I helped her get a disability pension from the teacher's pension plan, and I helped her get a low rental housing apartment from a social housing program that I was part of, and did a number of things for her that way. But over and above that, I thought to myself, what is there about this terrible disease which causes employers to bully employees, which causes unions to really ignore the sick members, and which causes the Human Rights Commission to be other than fair with them and not really listen to their full story and so on. So I began to study chronic fatigue syndrome. And my goodness, here at this late stage in my life, I think 71 was reasonably late stage in my life back in 1995, I'm introduced to a whole new world of tragedy. I had not heard of chronic fatigue syndrome. And,
hold that thought, Don. We'll be back in just a moment with all of our stations.
Okay.
Well, this is Don, and basically the woman with chronic fatigue came to visit him. He found she had many social problems. He helped her with the social problems and get a pension from other retirement funds, teacher's retirement fund, get a low-cost apartment. But as he began contemplating, what is chronic fatigue syndrome? Why are people who have this disease suddenly almost second-class citizens? They can't get treatment from the doctors. Everybody thinks that they're putting on, they're exaggerating their symptoms. And yet, of course, in the United States today, and I'm sure it was quite true back then, there were at least 1 million people. Now there may be a couple of million people with this illness. It's an infectious disease. One of these the chronic infectious diseases, that I believe it's the type that Mrs. Zygmunt-Brzezinski was writing about back in 1970, as you would create these chronic diseases to cripple the enemy. Well, of course, we are the enemy of the elitists that Mr. Brzezinski represents. And, of course, this disease has been spread, and it is contagious, but Don has so much more information. Anyway, he suddenly began wondering, what is chronic fatigue? And so he began to examine the disease, what was known about it at that time, and you pick up the story now.
Yes, well, there were several things happened around the same time that were very fortunate. One was, I came upon a book which was newly published, and it was by Hillary Johnson, and it was called Osler's Web, and it was a chronicle inside, it said, of the chronic fatigue labyrinth. Well, that is a marvelous book. I've read it through two or three or four or five times, and every time I learned something new. And I realized that there was an awful, awful lot more to chronic fatigue syndrome than just the name of a disease and some people wandering around suffering from it. And I did a second thing then, which was very helpful. I made up an 8-page survey, and I sent it to about 100 people that I was able to find who had chronic fatigue syndrome, because they belonged to patient support groups. So many of them, in fact, practically all of them, were finding the same thing had happened to them as had happened to the lady who called me. They were being bullied on the job. Their husbands were saying to them, oh, you're not the woman I married, and health people were saying to them, well, look, if you just took up line dancing, you'd get over it, and so on. And I was able to track down 100 of these people and send them this 8-page survey. And then I began to tally the survey, and I found out an awful lot about chronic fatigue syndrome that I had never known from the answers from 50 of these people that replied to my questionnaire. And I realized that it was actually a very serious disease, but I didn't know where it was coming from, and neither did the people who were ill. And I didn't know how to respond to it, and neither did the doctors they were going to. And that set me to work then on this answering the question, what is chronic fatigue syndrome? Now, I must admit that I had in the back of my mind, and I'd never paid much attention to it, a document I'd seen a number of years before, a document that had been secured under Freedom of Information Act by some people investigating the murder of John F. Kennedy. And this murder of John F. Kennedy had a number of elements to it that suggested that the United States government was engaged in an awful lot of things that were kind of under the table as far as the rest of the world was concerned, as far as the average person in the United States was concerned. And then there was another document that had come to me by virtue of my responding to this first document to the people who sent it to me, and they had announced that they had a document which talked about the origins of AIDS. And I thought, AIDS? What does that have to do with chronic fatigue syndrome, I wonder? And then I realized that on page 95 of Osler's Web by Hillary Johnson, it said that AIDS was a mirror image of chronic fatigue. And then it dawned on me that both of these new diseases had appeared in 1981 officially, and that both were somehow involved with the human immune system, the system that our bodies have developed over the billions of years to protect us from various diseases, our immune system. Something was happening to that, so that people were presenting with a disease called AIDS, and others were presenting with a disease called chronic fatigue syndrome, and these diseases were related to each other. And this other document that was sent to me was dated June the 9th, 1969. Excuse me. And lo and behold, it was a presentation by Dr. Donald MacArthur of the Pentagon, who was telling 12 congressmen from the U.S. Congress what progress they were making in biological warfare weapons development. And he told, the main thing he told them was, we're working on 2 biological weapons. One weapon is designed to kill or be lethal. The other is designed to be disabling. And both of them, he said, at various parts of the June 9th report, are based upon the fact that the human immune system is altered so that it no longer does its job of protecting us from common diseases. Well, I thought, well, there's AIDS, all right. There's the altered immune system letting down the barriers to various cofactor diseases, opportunistic diseases, and this disabling disease, is it chronic fatigue syndrome, I wondered, and I began studying that to find out. And along the line, I found another disease called fibromyalgia, which in so many respects is chronic fatigue syndrome, but has one rather unique quality. There are some 22 points on the human body which, if pressed, elicit considerable pain on the part of the person who has them. And these are called the tender points. And the people with those tender points are people with chronic fatigue syndrome with a special form of symptom, the tender points. So here I was looking now at, I started off looking at one disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, and I was now looking at three diseases, AIDS and fibromyalgia. And then I came upon another book, and this book was called Something to Fatigue by Dr. Ed Shorter. And in that book, Ed Shorter really made a great deal of fun out of people who had chronic fatigue syndrome. And he was so derogatory in his comments about chronic fatigue syndrome that I called him up at his place of work, which is at the University of Toronto, and I said, I'd like to talk to you about your book. And he said, well, I'd be happy to do that. Come on down to Toronto, and I'll schedule an hour, and we can talk about it. So I went down to Toronto, and he began with a certain amount of PR stuff, and I said, well, look, I want to get right to the point. Here is a copy of your book, and I've underlined a number of lines, and I read these lines as statements off to him, different pages in the book. And I said, do they not seem snide to you? And he said, well, I meant them to be. And he said, I was addressing middle-aged women who were suffering from a make-believe disease. And he said, I was aiming at them. And I said, a make-believe disease? And he said, yes, they're not really sick. They're just imagining they are because they can't stand the stress of the world. Well, I realized then that this is where a lot of the problems are coming from. People like Dr. Edward Shorter and this theme of his. And then I learned that his book had been used as a reference in a law case, and the judge had referred heavily to Shorter's book. And she was convinced, too, that chronic fatigue was a disease simply in the head, that there was no physical illness. And this then, as I say, helped me realize where people like the employers of this lady that came to me and her union members and other people were getting the idea that she wasn't really sick, that she was just imagining it because the world was too tough on her. I knew from my meetings with this lady and from the 50 people who had responded to my survey and my later questioning of them that they had a very real illness. And where the heck was that illness coming from? And why was nobody really doing hardly anything about it? And that set me off, as I say, at the age of 71, to find the answers, and I have not had a day go by since that day, I'm sure, that I haven't spent at least 15-20 minutes, but usually an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, or even more, sometimes 12 hours in the day, on chronic fatigue and on sources that I had managed to track down and study, and people that I learned who had also been working on it who were also
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. There's been a real cover-up. Go right ahead, Don.
All right, thank you. And these people were very helpful to me, and I went back to
gold, and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com.
About it, they were told, oh, well, there's a fire 40 miles away, and those mosquitoes are flying 40 miles to get rid of it. Of course, that's ridiculous. But well, a few weeks after the mosquito plague, people began coming down with a disease, a chronic fatigue disease. And then people, officials began coming around, going door to door to find out, you know, if the people had gotten the disease and how they fared after the disease. And so, then, of course, Don began to look into the background of mosquitoes. He found out there was a place in Canada where they were actually breeding mosquitoes. Why would you want to breed mosquitoes? Will you pick up the story there, Don?
Yes, well, the Canadian government had been asked by the United States government to breed 100 million mosquitoes a month at this Dominion Parasite Laboratory. And when they bred these mosquitoes, they were to turn them over to the Canadian Army, and the Canadian Army was to turn them over to the University, Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, Canada, where there was a Dr. Reed. And Dr. Reed was really a, you'd have to call him a Nazi, a fascist. He was contaminating these mosquitoes with new diseases that were being developed by the U.S. government's Department of Defense biological warfare agents were working on diseases that would be carried by mosquitoes.
Now, how do we know that actually Dr. Reed was doing that? Is there any record of that?
We do have many records now, fortunately, and I have one right at hand here. It's a book called The United States and Biological Warfare, and it is by Stephen Endicott and Edward Hagerman, who are both professors of at the University of in Toronto. And they have documented evidence, really quite solid U.S. government documents, many of them secured under Freedom of Information, which itemizes how Dr. Reed and the Queen's University and the Dominion Parasite Laboratory were breeding and contaminating these mosquitoes, then turning them back over to the Canadian military, who shared them with the British military and the United States military. And it was shortly after they had begun this cooperative exercise that a whole bunch of mosquitoes turned up in Punta Gorda, Florida, and a whole bunch of people became ill with chronic fatigue syndrome. And then I remembered back on June the 9th, 1969, in his document, or his report to the congressman, Dr. MacArthur was asked, well, how would this new disabling disease be spread? And he said, well, by aerosol, which means, of course, that if people breathe in the air that somebody who is sick with the disease has already got that disease. If they breathe in that air, they can actually get that disease, but it would take an awful lot of breathing in of contaminated air. And he says the other way is the insect vector, mosquitoes, for example. And I thought, well, my good heavens, here they are working to develop a disabling weapon, and here is Canada breeding mosquitoes and contaminating them with some new disease, and here is a disease breaking out in Punta Gorda, Florida, and here is a big shot from the U.S. Health agencies coming down to Punta Gorda, Florida with a bunch of men going from door to door asking people, did you get sick and what were your symptoms and how serious is it and so on. And so that all fitted together. I thought to myself, well, look, what's happening? They're working on these biological weapons, and one of the weapons they're working on is a weapon, we don't know what it is, but one which will cause chronic fatigue syndrome.
Well, now, what again was the title of the book written by Stephen Endicott?
What was the title?
Yes.
The title is The United States and Biological Warfare.
Biological Warfare. Okay, I'm sure you have the references to all this in your book, don't you, that's going to be up
yes,
very soon?
Yes, I have the references in the books, a couple of books that we've already written, but the latest book we're writing is the second book in our trilogy. We wrote AIDS, The Crime Beyond Belief, which you have been very, very helpful in marketing.
Incidentally, we do carry that book, AIDS, The Crime Beyond Belief. I mean, countless millions, tens of millions have died of this disease. It's decimating Africa. Today in Washington, D.C., 7% of the black men now have this disease. It's an entirely new disease, ladies and gentlemen. And those who've studied it are convinced, as I am, that this, of course, is actually produced. It's a produced disease. And there were 7% of the blacks in Washington, D.C. have it. But nobody's ever going to investigate this because, of course, could you imagine the implications? A crime beyond belief.
And people, for that reason, just thought and don't even want to look at it.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Don Scott. And, Don, you go right ahead.
All right, thank you. Well, that was Punta Gorda, and that was very early on in my research. And then I read about Incline Village out in kind of overlaps the border of California and what is it?
Well, it's in by Lake Tahoe. It's up by
Lake Tahoe.
Right.
And what had happened there was very strange. It was a high school, and that high school was closed in the summer. And during the summer, when it was closed, a group of people arrived at the school, lawfully, of course, and apparently with the permission of the local school board, and they tore out the air conditioning system that the school had and put a brand new system back in. But it was a very unusual system. It was a system which took air from one room, heated it or cooled it as was required, and took it back to the same room. They had double ducts for every room, and so that the people who went into one room in the morning essentially got the same air over and over and over and over again. And there was this one staff room which had eight teachers assigned to it, and these eight teachers were told, look, the main staff room is so crowded that you will have to mark your papers and take your lunches and take your break periods and so on in this eight-room staff room, and we've got this new air conditioning system, so we don't want you to open the windows, and to make sure you don't, we have both of them shut. So the windows were bolted shut, and they were confined to the room with the same air being breathed over and over and over, and they began talking among themselves, saying, my goodness, there's something wrong with this air. We don't like this air. And a shop teacher who was particularly health conscious was so determined that the air was poor that instead of using that staff room which he had been assigned to, he brought to the school a trailer that he used to use in the summer when he went traveling, and he parked it on the edge of the school property. And whenever he had a lunch period or a break period, he went out to that trailer and did his marking there and ate his lunch there and then came back in and went to the other rooms to teach and so on. And one by one by one, the seven teachers using that...
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Gersdon was telling us the story of Incline Village. There's a high school there where the teachers were told, eight teachers were assigned to this one room. It was a very special room because it had some sort of a special air conditioning in it where the people were not allowed to open the window. They were required to sit there and grade their papers, and they were assigned and told to stay in that room. All eight of them. Well, of course, one of them was health conscious. Brought a trailer, parked it on the edge of the property, and went there and did his work during the day. He was concerned about that room. There was something very strange. Why couldn't they open a window? Why did they have to sit there? Why did they have different air in that room than in the rest of the school? But then, one by one, the seven teachers who were just doing what they were told, like good Americans, they began coming down ill with what sort of disease, Don?
Chronic fatigue syndrome. And not only did they become ill with chronic fatigue syndrome, but some of their students in other parts of the school also developed it. They were very, very few in number, but the evidence was that it was spreading to them. And the seven teachers who used the room all became ill with chronic fatigue syndrome. The only teacher who did not become ill was the one who used his trailer to take his break periods instead of the closed down room rebreathing air. Then it hit me. My goodness, another thing that MacArthur had told the congressman was not only that the disease could be carried by insects, mosquitoes, for example, but could also be carried by aerosol.
And because this story is actually written up in Hillary Clinton's, Hillary Johnson's book.
Yes, Hillary Clinton gives this story, and I was able to contact one of the people she mentions, and we've had correspondence since. and he's very, very, very ill, and he is very reluctant to believe that somebody somewhere ordered that he be made sick with a biological agent which they were testing. But anyway, I do know him, and he's now, when he looks at the evidence, he's reluctantly coming to the view that, yes, indeed, he was a test object.
A human guinea pig. It's very difficult for Americans to believe that they would do this sort of thing to Americans, that they would actually experiment on them. Well, that's because they've never read the Rockefeller Committee report, which we have put out by the Veterans Administration over the name of Senator Jay Rockefeller, that talks about all the experiments that have been done on the American people, but you have no recourse. Because, of course, the government is above the law.
Yes,
and they do this sort of thing. And if you doubt that, you need to get the Rockefeller Report through our ministry. But you'll certainly want to get the books that Don has written. And we'll be carrying this one as soon as it's available. We already have the book, AIDS, the Crime Beyond Belief. And it is a crime beyond your belief. And tens of millions of people have died. And today, 7% of the black men in our nation's capital now carry the disease. 10% of the people there between ages of 41 and 49 are now infected, as the disease is gradually increasing its spread in Washington, D.C., and then gradually, I'm sure, across America. But you go right ahead, Don.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. And then in Oz's Web, I read another case. It was about Lindenville, New York. And a number of children had been drinking goat's milk, and suddenly quite a number of them became ill with chronic fatigue syndrome. And actually, one of the little girls who became ill had passed away. The disease was so serious with her, so the talk that she was imagining she was ill certainly was proven to be silly gabble. But the number of students who were drinking goat's milk who became ill was so noticeable that it became a subject of Hillary Johnson's book as well. And there was a Dr. David Bell, happened to be in that town, along with his wife, who also happened to be a medical doctor. And the wife, when she saw all the symptoms of these students who became ill, with chronic fatigue syndrome, suddenly said, well, those are all the symptoms of chronic brucellosis. And brucellosis was a disease, a zoonotic disease that suffered by cattle and dogs and so on, as well as humans. But she couldn't, when she drew the blood and tested it, she could not find any of the bacterium from brucella. So she wrote that off as a possibility. But then in our further research, we have a government report made to the U.S. Senate, and in that government report, which is dated in the 1970s, I haven't got the exact date here in front of me, the biological warfare people tell the senators this time, so they're equally culpable, that they had managed for the first time to take the disease agent out of bacterium, or bacteria, the plural of it, and to reduce it to a crystalline form, so that there was no evidence in the individual who was sickened that there was a bacterium involved. All they had was the symptoms, the disease without the disease agent. And my goodness, what in heaven's name was this mysterious crystalline form of a disease agent which caused chronic fatigue syndrome, among other things? And I went down to Lindenville and moseyed around the little town there and went into the local drugstore and talked to the people there. And I was puzzled by the fact that the ones who became ill had been ones who had drunk unpasteurized goat's milk. And I realized, well, here's another test. They're finding out, A, can it be carried by mosquitoes? They're finding out, B, can it be carried by air? They're finding out, C, whether it can be carried by food chain. And they're finding out in all cases that they could be. And the link seemed to be the brucellosis, and the link also seemed to be the experimentations that were being done to reduce the bacterial disease to a crystalline form, because then crystal or crystalline form of the disease could be circulated in all kinds of ways that they couldn't circulate the disease when it was in the bacterium, because the bacterium would die before the disease was communicated to the victims. Well, that was one of the early things that we had learned, and we continued our research into this chronic fatigue syndrome, and we looked then at the different sources of information on biowar weapons, and we found this marvelous book by Endicott and Hegerman that I mentioned to you, The United States and Biological Warfare. And we ran across another one by a fellow by the name of Ed Regis. And in that book, Regis says that the U.S. government around the 1950s had actually taken into inventory a weapon based upon the brucellosis bacterium. And holy mackerel, that was what Dr. Bell's wife, also Dr. Bell, had first speculated when she saw these people. What's the connection here? Well, we didn't know, but we were working along, and then one day we got a phone call. And the phone call, a voice said, Mr. Scott, and I said, yes, or Dr. Scott, or whatever it was he said. He said, this is Dr. Garth Nicholson. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't recognize the name. And he said, well, I'm the director of the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas. And that rang a bell, because the MD Anderson Cancer Center is one of the world's leading cancer centers. And here is the director of that cancer center calling me, a retired high school teacher up in Sudbury, Ontario, Canada. And I said, well, I'm honored to have a call from you, sir. What is it you want? He said, I've been hearing stories on the Internet and so on about what you're finding out about chronic fatigue syndrome. And he said, this is very, very interesting. And he said, I just wanted to touch bases with you and tell you that it seems to be making an awful lot of sense. And I said, well, thank you, Dr. Nicholson, and there was a bit more conversation, I suppose, but anyway, that was Dr. Nicholson phoning us, and I learned later that he had been nominated for the Nobel Prize in Medicine, so I couldn't be too far off. And by this time, around this time, I recruited my son, who was working in another area, and I said, Bill, look, I'm getting awfully overwhelmed with work here, and he said he'd work with me, and we've been struggling along ever since. But with Dr. Garth Nicholson's blessings from a long way away, and just the words to say good luck, that was very helpful to us, and we carried on with our research and began looking at that law case I'd heard about where a Canadian judge, Justice Rollins, out in Alberta, the province of Alberta, had heard a case where a lady said she had become ill with chronic fatigue syndrome as a result of an automobile accident. Well, we had found out that this was really quite feasible, because we had learned that chronic fatigue syndrome, in many of the instances in the people who replied to our surveys and other people we had met since then, the chronic fatigue had followed an accident of some kind, a rear-end automobile accident, a fall on the ice or whatever. And this one lady had had an automobile accident, and the next thing she knew, she was ill with chronic fatigue and could hardly get out of bed, and she sued for damages. And Justice Rollins heard the case, and Justice Rollins was, typical of so many of these people involved in the legal profession that hear these cases about chronic fatigue. She ruled that there is no such thing as fibromyalgia, which was the variation that this person had suffered. And that it was a money-driven thing, that the people who were in accidents pretended they were ill, sued and got there looking for cash settlements, and so she dismissed the case. Well, my goodness. That became a subject then of our studies as well. And I then took it upon myself to go down in Sudbury and join the Fibromyalgia Society. And the very day I went to their first meeting, I was elected to their board. They were surprised that anybody was taking fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, so seriously as to do this questioning that I was doing and being in touch with people quite far afield to learn all I could about it and the rest of it. And then I was able to take a trip to Ottawa, where I met the executive of what they called the National Myalgic Encephalitis Fibromyalgia Action Network. Well, I learned then that myalgia, my ME, was a better sounding word for chronic fatigue syndrome. This encephalitis, myalgic encephalitis, was really chronic fatigue syndrome. And when I attended their executive meeting, at that very meeting I was elected to their executive as director of research, because they had never heard of the research I was doing. They had never dreamed, it seemed, that anybody would contaminate mosquitoes, or that anybody would contaminate food or air and give people illnesses. And there had been an outbreak of chronic fatigue in the area a while before, and it had been preceded by a huge infestation of mosquitoes. And a number of people who were ill could remember quite clearly being bit by the mosquitoes, which is unusual remembering as a mosquito bite. But they could remember because the bite left a particularly obvious swelling, and colored white and red instead of just red like ordinary mosquito bites. So they elected me to their executive. That's fine. I was going to be carrying on my research anyway. And at that meeting, there was a wonderful lady called Louise Richard. Now, it turned out Louise Richard had Gulf War illness. She had been in the Canadian Army as a nurse, and she had been sent to Kuwait at the very first outbreak of battle of the first Gulf War. Excuse me. And she had come under Scud missile attack. And she was working in the field hospital, and this Scud missile exploded overhead. But there was no pieces of metal falling down, no fragmentation bombs or anything like that. It was just the explosion of the Scud missile and then all silence, except the biological weapon detectors began going off all over the place. They were coming under biological weapon attack, but suddenly somebody came roaring up in a Jeep and said, "It's a false alarm, false alarm. There's no biological weapons attack. Don't do anything about the alarms are going off." So they didn't do anything, and a few days later, Captain Richard, she was acting captain, she began noticing when she combed her hair that her hair was coming out by the handful. And then she began to feel nauseous every time she went in to eat. She felt she couldn't stomach the food, she couldn't even look at it. And then she found herself waking up in the middle of the night and was with cold sweats and shivering and the rest of it. She realized she'd becoming ill with something, and it came to be known then as Gulf War illnesses. And when she got back to Canada, the military told her, "Oh, you're not really sick, you just couldn't stand the stress of war." And she said, "Well, I came under Scud attack." And they said, "Well, those were false alarms, and there were 14,000 biological weapons alarms went off during the first Gulf War, and every one of those 14,000 was deemed to be a false alarm." Good heavens. What is the use of having alarms for biological weapon attack if when these alarms sound, they're labeled false alarms? And I met Louise at that meeting, and we've been colleagues and friends ever since, because she has been doing marvelous work for veterans who have Gulf War illnesses. So to my list of illnesses, which had gone from chronic fatigue to chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia to chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and AIDS, I was able to add on Gulf War illness. And another way of dispersing the disease agent appeared to be Scud missile attack.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do have time for one call here. Steve, you have a quick call from, we're just in a break here. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Steve.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us.
In the East, we'll pick this up. But first of all, we carry Don's book, AIDS, The Crime Beyond Belief. We'll be carrying his new book. How soon will that book be out, Don?
That is now due in May 19th.
My wife just sent another check to try to, so we can get another special beforehand. We want to be carrying them. We have a four-tape set on chronic fatigue syndrome. We have a four-tape set on AIDS. We certainly carry a book that Don had written, the Skull Valley Incident, I think is the title of it. We have copies of that, at least last time I checked we did. What was the full title of that book on the Skull Valley?
It was called The Extremely Unfortunate Skull Valley Incident. An awful long-winded title, but it came right from the report that Dr. MacArthur was making to the congressman, and there had been an accident when they were testing one of the disease agents, and they killed about 3,000 sheep. And Dr. MacArthur referred to it, typical bureaucraties, as an extremely unfortunate incident. It was extremely unfortunate, all right.
We actually have that book in stock. And then, of course, we carry the Rockefeller Committee report. It's a government report. It's inexpensive. But it will actually give you the background of all the terrible experiments they've done on American military and civilian personnel without their knowledge or consent, because you can't let the American people know that they're really experimenting on us. You need to get our 4-tape set on population control. We have a talk on population control. One called None Dare Call It Genocide. One called, and these are either DVDs or videos, Planned Population Control. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, they do have a plan. They intend to kill off most of the world's population. You say, why would any rational person want to do that? And the problem is, we're not dealing with rational people. We're people who have a different worldview entirely. They're elitists who really aren't concerned about human suffering. So you need, of course, to understand these are not imaginary. They're very real. Certainly we do have copies of Dr. MacArthur's testimony before the House Appropriations, Military Appropriations Committee. I think we have that in bound form. Or otherwise, and you really would want to read the whole thing, although we do have a very short version, we'll be glad to send you, but you want to read the whole thing and understand. We actually have the National Security Study Memorandum, 2000, came out in 1974 over a signature of Henry Kissinger, talking about the necessity of eliminating large parts of the world's population. A secret government report eventually was declassified. NSSM 2000, that's National Security Study Memorandum 2000. We try to provide this information because we want you to have the original documents to show to people about what the sort of macabre things we're doing. On a little different line, we do actually have the Church Committee report on MK-Ultra, on all, of course, the diseases, the mental diseases they inflicted upon people. The CIA tried to destroy all of this evidence. The CIA was involved with all of these things. The Department of the Army was certainly involved. And you have to understand that when you're in the government service, you sign secrecy oaths. And if you ever tell the truth, they'll come after you. In fact, we have a wonderful 4-tape set of the survivors of the USS Liberty, an American intelligence ship with over 280 men on board that was sent off the coast of the Sinai Peninsula during the 67 war. And the idea was they were going to sink the ship and blame it on the Egyptians so we could go to war with the Egyptians. All of those men were to be killed by the torpedo boats, by the special forces, by the airplanes that came in, and they survived. But the men who survived, of course, were warned. They would be sent to Leavenworth or worse, being killed, if they ever told the truth. You are number 1-800-544-8927. Get the information. Well, Dr. Stan back here, our guest this evening, Don Scott. And Don, you go right ahead with the story.
Well, thank you very much. And I'm not sure where we left off, but I had been mentioning Captain Louise Richard and Gulf War Syndrome. And that then brought me to the Regal Report, which I think you carry as well, do you not?
Well, remind me what it is.
It's a report by Senator Regal members of his banking committee. It's called the United States Dual Use Exports to Iraq and Their Impact on the Health of the Persian Gulf War Veterans.
Yes, we do carry that. That was a fascinating report. It cost Senator Regal his Senate seat. And they did everything to suppress this, to discredit him. In fact, I tried to get him to come on to our program. He was afraid to come on. He's trying to live his life now. But I came. He paid a terrible price for telling the truth. But it's an amazing report, and we do carry the Regal report. Go right ahead.
Yes, now, when one reads that report, which is over 500 pages long, it makes absolutely clear that the United States government came under, or at least the coalition forces in the first Gulf War, came under Scud missile attack, and the Scud missiles were loaded with biological weapons. And the question is, where did those weapons come from? And the fact of the matter is they came from the United States of America. That war was a phony war by a phony President George Bush Sr., and George Bush had been president with part of the time President Reagan. During that time, Gulf War disease agents that later turned up in the report by Senator Regal and his fellows on his committee, had been provided to Saddam Hussein by the United States of America. Now, it's a very, very important book for that reason, a terrible, frightful book to have to read if you want to read it. But in our latest book, which we're working on now and will be out in May, called Odyssey on the Trail of Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, we draw attention to the fact that on page 276 of this 500-page book by the United States government, the Regal Report, on that page 276, there's a very, very brief five-sentence explanation of what the real problem was. Now, the rest of the book deals with the fact that there were alarms going off, 14,000 of them, and those alarms were supposed to signal the presence of biological agents, and people were getting sick with them. And the thing is that shortly after these scuds began exploding, George Bush phoned in the middle of the night to his commander and said, stop the attack wherever you are. Order full stop all the way along the battlefront, and be prepared within a few days to start withdrawing forces. And everybody was surprised. What? My goodness. We're on our way to Baghdad. We're going to win this war without any trouble at all. And here suddenly we're pulling out. And George Bush had a great song and dance explanation. But the real explanation was they realized that they were coming under missiles armed with their own biological weapons, and that the defenses that they had shot into the arms of the soldiers who were serving there, the various chemicals that they were given to counteract some of the weapons, were not working. And that if they didn't stop their attack when they were hit with essentially chronic fatigue syndrome, the next Scud missiles would probably be loaded with anthrax, and there would be 50,000, that's 10% of the 500,000 men on the battlefield, there would be 50,000 of these people dead within a week.
All right, and hold on thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Don Scott. And, of course, this was one of the great tragedies, but we'll be back in just a moment. Well, Don, you go ahead and pick the story up.
Well, thank you. And that is a serious enough charge, and it is all capable of being fully established now by documents. However, in the Regal Report, as I say, on page 276, it gives a five-line explanation of really why they got the heck out of there in such a big hurry. And it says that UNSCOM, the United Nations Commission on Biological Weapons, reported after the war to committee staff that a biological warfare inspection was conducted at the Iraq Atomic Energy Commission in 1993. That's after the war ended. This suggests that the Iraqi government may have been experimenting with the materials cited above, which were E. coli and a retrovirus, our DNA is called here, in an effort to create genetically altered microbiological, novel biological, in brackets, warfare agents. Now there you have it. What they had provided to Saddam Hussein, in addition to brucellosis, which they admit to fully in this book, they had provided the agent known as the mycoplasma, and mycoplasma is one of the diseases caused, is the agent that causes chronic fatigue syndrome, and we know that from a U.S. government patent by Dr. Shai-Ching Lo, which I think you also carry.
Yes, we do have that.
That in that, in that patent, Dr. Shai-Ching Lo, who's the leading medical research doctor in the United States, or at least he was the last time I heard of him, and he says that people infected with the mycoplasma will be patients who have been diagnosed as having. Now, the inference is, of course, diagnosed. Who are you diagnosed by? By your doctor, not by your auto mechanic or something. Will be people who have been diagnosed as having AIDS, AIDS-related complex, chronic fatigue syndrome, and then he gives a whole list of diseases.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Zing, Dr. Stan, and Don is talking about it. Dr. Hai-Ching Lo, he worked for the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology. He has the patent on a genetically modified mycoplasm that produces AIDS. It produces, and of course remember that AIDS is not simply HIV, it's a combination disease, but it produces AIDS and chronic fatigue and Gulf War syndrome and fibromyalgia, and that's all on the patent. It's the most amazing thing, but of course they can't let the American people know that they patent this terrible disease they've unleashed on us. Because, of course, the American people might wake up one day and realize, of course, that a very evil group of people have gained control of the reins of our government, control both political parties, and make mockery out of the concept of a representative government. Go right ahead, Don.
Thank you. Well, the Regal Report was a real starter for us in our research and confirmed what we had learned from Captain Louise Richard, biological weapons provided to Saddam Hussein by the United States of America were used against coalition forces, and that the whole Gulf War, First Gulf War and Second Gulf War, were totally, totally phony wars. Now, admittedly, Saddam Hussein was a gangster and should not have been the ruler of a country, but it is up to the citizens of the country to get rid of him. It isn't up to the citizens of a country that has a secret governors as evil as those that are working in the United States to go over there and get rid of them for them. and look at the mess I've created there. But that's
well, I think the important thing about that, Don, is we carry. The important thing about what you just said is that we carry a book written by a CIA agent, ex-CIA. His name is Robert Byrd. And, of course, his book is See No Evil, We Carry It. And you pointed out, well, why don't the people of Iraq get rid of him? They tried. There were at least two occasions when Robert Byrd was there in the northern part of Iraq and Kurdistan during the 1990s. When the military tried to get rid of him, they made the mistake of telling the Americans what they were doing. And, of course, they were betrayed by the American State Department to actively keep Saddam Hussein in power. And in his book, Robert Byrd makes the point that he had never met an Iraqi citizen who did not believe that the American government was keeping Saddam Hussein in power. And many of them believed that he was actively working for the CIA. We know from other books that he was working for the CIA in the 1950s and 1960s, but we can't tell the American people that we were keeping him in power. Go right ahead.
Oh, absolutely. And it would be interesting to follow along a further evidence we have in this direction, but our direction is chronic fatigue syndrome and the fact that the disease was caused by the mycoplasma, and that the Regal report does bear this out, but just in passing, just barely in passing. Regal did a marvelous job, he and his committee, but boy, were they ever afraid of actually saying out loud what they, I'm sure, began to know. There is an evil in the power in the United States that is so far-reaching. Well, they can execute the president, such as John F. Kennedy, in the middle of the day in a large, middle of a large city and get away with it. So why in heaven's name couldn't they do these other things they've done, but which they have done? However, pursuing along our research, our odyssey on the trail of chronic fatigue syndrome, after the Regal report, we came upon another book which we should have come upon sooner, but unfortunately, it's very, very, very hard to get. It's a book edited by Dr. Byron Hyde and a couple of other medical doctors, and has some 75 or 80 contributors, and it is just laden with scientific information about chronic fatigue syndrome, it is well worth reading, partly because of these very, very good articles about chronic fatigue syndrome and the various factors involved, such as the deformed red blood cells and all the rest of it. And the listener that phoned in should make an effort to get hold of Dr. Byron Hyde's book.
Now, what's the title of it, Don?
It is called The Scientific and Clinical Basis of Myalgic Encephalomyelitis / Chronic Fatigue Syndrome. I realize it's a big title, but just look for Byron Hyde, H-Y-D-E, and his first name is Byron. Very, very hard to get, but well worth getting, and that's all I'll say about it, but except for the fact that he starts off with the first paragraph, the first chapter is about a Dr. Wallace from Britain who was one of the first to recognize that, lo and behold, there was a new disease showing itself called chronic fatigue, and Dr. Wallace wrote this very, very good summary of it, and then moved down to New South Wales, Australia to take up practice there, and he registered there as a doctor, and had his picture taken and all the rest of it. Then he disappeared. He just dropped off the map. He's just gone from the face of the earth. And nobody's been able to find out where he is or what happened to him. And was that because of the early days of chronic fatigue? Was there an attempt made to keep the thing under wraps? It was even more serious than the attempt being made today. We don't know. But that is the first chapter of Dr. Hyde's book. But then there's a section at the very back of the book, which is very, very important. It is a brief summary of Dr. Bjorn Sigurdsson, a doctor from Iceland. And Dr. Bjorn Sigurdsson had been a medical doctor, but he was very, very cognizant of the fact that a great problem facing Iceland was the diseases caused by what they call retroviruses, where the RNA comes back into the DNA, and every time you try to kill the RNA that carries the disease, you kill the healthy cells as well. In other words, you kill the patient to destroy the illness.
Was this a disease of sheep, or was this a disease of people?
It's a disease of sheep.
That's right. This is the Wiesner virus. Go ahead.
And the thing about Dr. Sigurdsson was he was brought over to the United States in 1941-42, and he worked at the Rockefeller Institute studying animal and plant viruses. Well, this disease organism, the retrovirus, is an animal virus, and he learned how to transplant this sheep disease, which had never before invaded human beings, or in modern times at any rate, over the last 200 or 300 years, no evidence of it. He learned how to do that. And then he went back to Iceland with $200,000 gift from the Rockefellers, and that would be $2 million today, and he was charged with the responsibility of setting up a new institute, which they called the Pathological Institute, or Experimental Pathology. That was an Institute of Experimental Pathology. Well, experimental, everybody knows the meaning of that word. You're trying things out. And pathology, of course, is disease-causing. And no sooner did he get that set up than in northern Iceland, there broke out one of the first really major epidemics of chronic fatigue syndrome. Now, this all ties together with the retrovirus and with the mycoplasma that I'll be speaking about in a few minutes. But this is all under the auspices of the Rockefellers. And 5 years after these diseases broke out, the Rockefeller Institute in New York sent a whole batch of doctors over to Iceland to study the long-term effects of this chronic fatigue syndrome epidemic that had broken out. And one of the things they reported was that five of the 1,700 students who became ill at that time, out of those students, five of them, the chronic fatigue had turned into Parkinson's disease. My goodness, what's the relationship? And these Parkinson's disease students ultimately died of Parkinson's disease, even though they were about 17 years old. And then that added on another disease to our quest. Here we started off with chronic fatigue syndrome, added on fibromyalgia, added on AIDS, added on other diseases.
Gulf War, don't forget the Gulf War, because this is...
Gulf War illnesses, right, and so on, and now we're adding on Parkinson's disease. And we established a relationship between Parkinson's disease and the chronic fatigue syndrome, and that is in our new book. We point out the evidence of how the one is clearly related to the other. So Dr. Byron Hyde's book was very, very valuable for what is said about chronic fatigue syndrome, but is even more valuable for what it... Dr. Hyde had no idea when he was talking about Dr. Sigurdsson, and he had no idea of how ominous it was that this whole thing was financed by the Rockefellers. And when, as we proceed with our book, we show how the Rockefellers had started back in 1905 on this whole project, aiming to limit the population growth in the world, because according to their standards, there were too many people, and they had to be reduced in numbers. Then we also look at things in the book, such as Dr. Les Simpson. Now, Dr. Simpson is a great doctor from New Zealand who had worked out a marvelous test for people with chronic fatigue syndrome, where he would draw a very small sample of their blood, and examine it and point out how the blood, red blood cells of people with chronic fatigue.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, Don, you were telling us about the red blood cells of people with chronic fatigue.
Yes, the.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
When that occurs, it releases cyanide, so suddenly you have a deadly poisons circulating within the body, a byproduct, of course, of the glutamine produced by the destruction of the cells, picking up the ammonia and becoming glutamate. And so pick up the story there.
Absolutely, and you summarized that very well. Now, the cyanide that can't be handled because of the excess of it being generated can't be handled by normal life processes, will home, and this is what we've learned, will home on the mitochondria, which are the batteries of the cells. Each cell, each one of our 50 trillion to 100 trillion cells, has several batteries called mitochondrium, or mitochondria in the plural, and the cyanide will home on it, and at what they call the fourth complex of the Krebs cycle. Now, within each one of these cells, the mitochondria, there's a cycle where energy is taken in and oxygen is taken in and energy is generated, and the mycoplasma release cyanide homes on that battery, just like, to use an analogy, you lay a screwdriver or some other metal instrument across the poles of a battery, boing, the battery goes dead. There's no energy being generated. And similarly with the cells that are infected by the cyanide, there is the loss of energy, which is normally used to power the body in all its functions, in its work, in its play, in its digestion, in its breathing, and people have chronic fatigue syndrome. And it's caused by the short-circuiting of the mitochondria by the cyanide. Now, this is all scientifically established. We have scientific papers, hundreds of them, which we have read, and all of the different things that you've learned about these diseases have a basis in science. And, for example, you spoke of the black people with AIDS in Washington, D.C. At least 40% more blacks become infected with AIDS than do whites exposed to the same source. And why do the blacks present more with AIDS than whites do? Because we have a scientific paper which demonstrates beyond doubt that black people naturally carry the mycoplasma in their body. White people basically do not. Certain tests show that 40% of blacks naturally carry the mycoplasma, where only about 3% of whites carry it. And therefore, if the mycoplasma is, as our other evidence shows us, a cofactor in AIDS, then the blacks already have one of the cofactors. All they have to get is the other, and they will be sick with AIDS, whereas only 3 whites per 40 blacks will have the same ratio. But it not only applies to AIDS. In a book called The Secret History of the War on Cancer by Deborah Davis at the University of Pennsylvania, she tells how 40% of black people become ill, 40% more black people become ill with cancers than do whites exposed to the same stimuli. And why do they...
Hold that thought, Don. We'll be back in just a moment. is Dr. Stan. Our guest is, of course, Dawn Scott. In fact, I'm very interested in what you're saying about Deborah Davis, because I've tried to get her onto our program several times, and she finally wrote back and said that she just was too busy to be on the program. We have her book. But why are blacks so much more prone to get cancer than whites?
They are prone to get cancer because 40% of the blacks naturally and genetically carry in their body the mycoplasma, and therefore they have, one half of them almost, are already halfway towards cancer or halfway towards AIDS. And Dr. Deborah Davis knows this, and she's actually afraid to say it. She's afraid to say it out loud. She claims in her book that she's revealing the secret history of the war against cancer. She's doing like Senator Riegel did, tells part of the story, and it's bad enough, but boy, is she afraid to tell the whole story.
And that was really very interesting, because, you know, most authors want to get on the radio and get the book out, and she would not come on. I think she's probably a nice person. But the same is true with Marcia Angel, who is a professor at Harvard, after, of course, she had written a book.